The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to Mark.
Glory to you, O Christ.
6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice. "This is my Son, the Beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. The Gospel of the Lord.
In the name of the Holy and Undivided Trinity, Amen. Please be seated. Good morning. Welcome to St. Margaret's. I have to confess to you that I am running on fumes right now. If you've ever heard somebody say that they just came off a red-eye flight, that's kind of how I feel right now. It's been a long week, and then it culminated with about 2.5 days in San Diego in anticipation and participation in our diocesan convention. I'm tired, but it's a good kind of tired because this was a good convention. This may have been one of the best I've ever attended. The spirit was good. The work was good. A lot of really terrific things happened. I want to tell you about just a handful of them. In addition to a bunch of resolutions we passed that needed to be passed and some work we got done that's probably not of vital interest to you, we did some other really cool things. For example, we heard at our keynote address from a man named Sean Rowe. He's a bishop out in the state of Pennsylvania. He is the youngest bishop in the Episcopal Church. He is 10 years younger than I am. And I know of Bishop Rowe because of that. That's why I know who he is. But I admit that I've never read anything that he had written. I got nothing against the guy, but I've just never really paid much attention. And I just thought, you know, well, I don't read everything about every bishop everywhere, you know. I assumed he was a good guy. Well, he's a great guy. This is the guy who has an incredible vision for the church, who just left me totally inspired. I will be collecting the video of his address to us and also the text and sharing it with you because you need to hear what this man said about you as the church and his sense of how God sees you and how he believes we could see ourselves and what God is doing in this place. He's a remarkable man. That was very inspiring. We also did something else that really inspired me a lot and excited me. Many of you know Bob Kimball, who's a longtime member of this parish and a volunteer over at the St. Margaret's Outreach Center. Dutiful volunteer, gets there at around 5 o'clock every time. He was presented with the Bishop's Servant Ministry Award by the bishop himself, who presented this to a handful of folks whose work just exemplifies the call of Christ to be the hands and feet in the world. It was such a feather in the cap of St. Margaret's and an honor for Bob to be recognized this way, because Bob is really living out the gospel the way that we're all supposed to, and so the bishop made special note of that. That was absolutely terrific. We had probably the culmination of the whole thing was the ordination of three deacons I think our own deacon, Cherry, could tell you about it, that there's a lot of work going on in our diocese around the diaconate and understanding what diaconal ministry is all about. The bishop wondered aloud who the next deacons were, who it is that's that's, you know, as we talked about, Bob, who is it that is living the gospel in this way that could be set apart by ordination as deacons to be the visible sign of the presence of Christ? David's ordination was spectacular. He's not able to be with us this morning, but you'll see a lot of David over the next 3 weeks after that. We'll be having a reception for David immediately after the service next week, and I hope you'll be able to participate in that. David was very excited. Look at St. Margaret's Facebook page. You'll see loads of pictures of that. It was a beautiful day. Couple of rumors just as a side that I want to make sure that I take care of. One is that while David is a deacon and David is of this parish, David is in no way replacing our own beloved Cherry Rembolt. Cherry is still here. Cherry is still our deacon. David is also our deacon. And in the same way that there are several of us priests around here, there are several folks in the choir. David is a deacon. Cherry is a deacon. Cherry's not going anywhere. And it's a delight. And because this comes up, I want to just, just name that flat out. I want to tell you something else that came up because a rumor came up. I was nominated to be elected to the standing committee of the diocese, and I was not elected. The person who was is a good friend and a great colleague. She lives here in Palm Desert. Her name is Kathleen Kelly. She is the rector of Church of the Good Shepherd up in Hemet. An extraordinary priest, a gifted mind, and a terrific person. I'm very proud to have her as a colleague. I'm not going to lie to you and say, I didn't want that anyway, because I did. I wouldn't have run for it if I hadn't. But that said, I don't feel as though I lost it. I feel as if the diocese gained Kathleen Kelly, because, like I said, she's somebody I really respect and admire, and so I don't view this as loss at all. She is going to be a terrific asset to the diocese, and I will find a different way to serve. So all that's good stuff that came out of this convention. It really inspired me. There were a couple of us, though, who were lamenting that, boy, this is a long convention. There's a lot going on. I'm really tired, and I have to preach when I get back. And a couple of us, though, had the good fortune of being able to say, but it's Transfiguration Sunday, and we used to be rector of the Church of the Transfiguration. So here's the good news. I've had a chance to give this some thought. I've thought about the Transfiguration before. I have some ideas about what I think God is saying to us about Jesus' own transfiguration and what that means to our transfigured lives. Now, I know that many of you have been in small congregations like Transfiguration was in Palos Park, and that you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Most churches called Transfiguration, because the story takes place on a hill, most churches of the Transfiguration are on the top of a hill or a mountain. And this one is no exception. Transfiguration Palos Park lies at the top of the tallest hill in Palos Park, which is a pretty hilly area in the first place. It was originally built as a very small building. There was a dirt road leading up to it. And it was, I'm just going to say it, ugly. It was a little concrete block. It had very little style or design. I saw the pictures, but it was something they could put on the ground on the top of this hill to the glory of God and gather in that place. And because it was small, it was added on to over and over. And you've been in this kind of church, I know, where you move from one room to the next and you're like, this is not the same building. I think this is two buildings that have been kind of smooshed together, and this kind of like the way that little kids will build forts out of blankets and chairs and things in the living room. That's how this church came together. It was kind of cobbled together a little bit at a time. And I say all this because the original cornerstone of the building, the original cornerstone, ended up being not where you'd expect it to be, just off the narthex with a larger lobby. And the 1954 cornerstone was just inside, of that lobby. The stones echo the words, that stone rather, echoes the words of Peter, James, and John on the mountain with Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. It is good for us to be here. It is good for us to be here. What an appropriate inscription for a building that would be the church of the Transfiguration. I think that the builders must have meant that it was good for the faithful of Palos Park to answer the call of Jesus Christ and ascend that small mountain in their wooded community to gather and to worship. But the building has been expanded several times, as I said, and the cornerstone now lies in close proximity to their main ladies' room. And I suppose that from time to time others have later said, "Oh, it is good for us to be here." In the days of the early church, Christians gathered in homes, usually in secret for fear of persecution. But when Christianity became the state religion of Rome under the Emperor Constantine, Christians adopted the model of the ever clueless Peter, who, though he was terrified and did not know what to say, felt compelled to speak anyway. "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. I suppose it is simply human nature." When something really amazing happens, we want to erect a monument. Some of us, for example, present for a lovely ordination yesterday, responded by whipping out our cameras. We want to capture that moment. Witness the number of places George Washington is known to have slept. Or, if you've ever driven through northern Illinois by my previous congregation, witness the number of boyhood homes of Ronald Reagan. Boy, that man got around. Now again, near Transfiguration in Palos, just northeast of the city of Palos Park, on the west side of Harlem Avenue, just north of I-55, there's a place that has a lot of history connected to it. If you don't know what a portage is, it means this. Sometimes when you're traveling by sea, if you reach land, a small piece of land, and you've got to get across it, you port it. That means you get out of your boat. You walk through swampy, leech-infested water. You pick up the boat itself and carry it through the swamp along with the cargo over your head to keep it dry. And then you put the boat down in the water on the other side. It used to be in the history of our country that if you wanted to get from the Atlantic Ocean into the western part of North America, or down even into the south, down the Mississippi River into New Orleans, the only way to do it was through a series of inlets through the Great Lakes. And then eventually you could end up in Chicago, and from there go a little bit of ways up the river, the one that you've heard about famously being reversed. But at the time there was no reversal, it was just the river. And it would get shallower and shallower until finally, if the river was high enough, you could get out, trudge through the swamp, and walk through to the Des Plaines River, which will take you back down to the Mississippi. That was the only way to do it, and so that place became very well known. That place became an important intersection of commerce. So there's a lot of history connected to that place, but not now a lot of people to speak of. Not anymore, anyway. With the construction of the I&M Canal, the Calumet Sag Channel, and the Sanitary and Shipping Canal, it's no longer necessary to lift canoes filled with cargo and walk the distance from the Des Plaines River to the Des Plaines River from the southern fork of the Chicago River. So except for the idly curious like me, nobody really goes there anymore. Just as no one much travels the way of the old Route 66 much anymore, because the real traffic patterns have changed course over time, and only the monuments remain. Now, the reality represented by the Chicago Portage Monument is historical, but it's really no longer relevant to the way we order our commerce, so it's sad to see that same phenomenon happen in our spiritual lives. When we erect monuments to the way things used to be, and live solely in the good old days. It's sad to see the burned out hulls of empty churches that used to be alive with the vitality of Christ. And it is tempting to imagine then that this means decline, that this means loss, when what it really means is simply change. It has always been in the nature of God that God gives us a glimpse. And we can build our booths if we want, but the glimpse goes away because what's been revealed to us is meant to be carried down the mountain and revealed in the world. For that moment on the mountaintop was a revelation of the real self of Jesus. And I am so grateful that St. Margaret's carries that light from the mountaintop places and continues to reveal it in the lives we live in our valley. The real self of Jesus, the Shekinah, the dwelling of God, that's what the Transfiguration means. We call the incident the Transfiguration, the big change, and that is right. But what the story is really about is not a change, but a revealing of the true figure of Jesus that has always been present but isn't always seen. In that event, His true light and beauty and divinity shone forth, and it left His three closest friends frightened and fumbling in their response. But their response is not the point of the story. The point of the story was what was revealed by that voice from the cloud. "This is My Son, the Beloved. Listen to Him." Here was the real self of Jesus. Here was the real voice of God. And then it passed. And there was only the Jesus they had known before, standing before them. We have to empathize with Peter, who seems to want to shelter and preserve that glory that had been revealed. But he's denied that control. Instead, he and the others are told to listen, which is to say, to trust and to obey. To receive the revelation has to be enough. It's the listening to Jesus and the following of Jesus that is our business, not the storing up of spiritual experiences. Because if we truly continue to follow down the mountain, if we truly know who Jesus is, and by extension, who we are, that light will show again from you and me in the darkest of places. A moment of glory may sustain us in our dark days, but it can't be our center. Our center is in following the living Jesus when we've come down from the mountain. Carolyn Estrada says, "The danger of putting Jesus in a dwelling on the mountaintop is that we leave Him there. And then perhaps get too caught up in our own lives to visit Him. Perhaps even forget that He is there. What we see on the mountaintop needs to be taken into our being so that we can bring the experience down from the mountaintop into the plains, into the wilderness, the deserts of our own lives and the lives of others. Our world makes many demands not only on our time, but on our being. It's easy for us to forget the truth about who we are. The truth is that each week when we come to the table and receive Christ in the sacrament, our smaller selves yield. And we receive anew our true selves. The veil is lifted. We're transformed and transfigured and released from the rock-hard, locked-up, self-obsessed selves that we had become, and freed to be our true, loving, compassionate, generous, joyous, just, and sacrificial selves. Our Christ-like selves. God has become a person so that we may become true persons, after the image of Christ, fresh as newly baked bread and potent as well-aged wine. We are set free and we're made fresh for life. So how far away from that vision is the life that you and I will wake up to tomorrow morning? I have to be honest with you, there are days when I simply cannot see God's reality at all. When I wonder why I'm here or whether my life makes any difference or any sense. There are stretches when I feel more drained and depleted than enlivened and energized. Like Peter, I would like to dwell in the sheltered and well-preserved spiritual radiance. But on the darkest days, I know that Jesus is my companion, my friend, my Redeemer, and my Lord. Whatever it is that I have to face or to endure, if Jesus is by my side, it will be all right. And I believe that I have seen what He will become in the light of the resurrection, and I know that He will not be finished with me until I, too, shine with that radiance. When the French playwright Paul Claudel found the meaning of Christianity for himself, it is said that he clung to a massive pillar at Notre Dame Cathedral and exclaimed, "O God, You have become for me a person." Well, the Transfiguration teaches us that every time you and I take a step toward becoming our true, real selves, our Christ-like selves, God throws His arms around one of the pillars of heaven and shouts for all to hear, "O child of mine, you have become for me a person." Amen.